Welcome to Functional Divorce, your guide to healing and happiness. I'm Dr. Karen Finn.
Now, I can't tell you how many times I've heard a woman call her ex-husband a controlling prick. And, you know, there are men that I talk to out there who talk about their ex-wives as a ball-busting bitch. And I got to tell you, once the name calling starts, all I can think is these two people may be divorced, but they're still at war with each other. And the problem is they don't even realize that the only real casualties of that kind of a war are their kids. Now, to help us make sense out of how to take co-parenting out of the war zone, I'm speaking with Karen Becker. Karen's the author of How to Co-Parent When Your Ex Won't, and a family coach who spent years working with couples one-on-one and in groups as they transition from parenting together in a relationship to co-parenting. Welcome to Functional Divorce, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me.
And, you know, we were talking kind of before we started this about how funny it is to call each other Karen. You know, most people wouldn't think that's a big deal, but I still feel awkward calling somebody else by my name.
Right.
So, you know, I really do want to understand that how you see that parents who are wanting to win the divorce war can also claim to have their kids' best interest at heart.
That's what's difficult, right? So a lot of these parents do see it as a competition. And if I can prove that I'm the better parent, or our kid loves me more, or would rather be with me than with you, they feel like they've won, but there's no competition going on. And that's what I would like to educate these co-parents on. If you can get out of the competition mindset and into the what's best for my child mindset, then the co-parenting will start down a more positive path.
Well, you know, what I hear so often, though, is that they are acting from the best interest of their kids.
You're right. Every co-parent that I've had in every class I've ever taught or one-on-one will say, but this is best for my child. And there's a whole section of the book that talks about this too. We forget that what's best for our child is not necessarily one way. Mm. There could be multiple ways that are great for our children, but there's usually not one right way.
Oh my gosh. Now, for the perfectionists out there, that's got to be driving them crazy to think that there could be more than one right answer.
Right. I was one of them. I absolutely was.
I hear you. You know, as anybody who has kind of perfectionistic tendencies, you know, it's a matter of there is a right and a wrong way. And I've got the children's best interest at heart. That means my way is right.
Wouldn't it be great if it was that black and white?
You know, I don't know if it honestly would be. It might put too much pressure on us perfectionists.
That is part of the good news, right? Is if we mess up or if we make a wrong decision, it's all fixable. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that I don't really get when people can see that their kids are crying, you know, and they've just had a great big fight with their spouse over what should or shouldn't be going on with respect to co-parenting, is how they miss the pain that their kids are actually going through. What's going through that typical parent's mind?
Right. I think that you're right. They are, in their minds, they're thinking of their child. But what they hear is, well, my child says they like it better here, or my child says they don't like it when their other parent does this. Mm-hmm. They're not noticing that their child is likely only telling them what they want to hear.
Yeah.
So they probably aren't seeing that they're also hurt for their other parent. Or at the end of the day, if they play baseball versus soccer, you know, if that's what a fight is over, doesn't really matter. You know, I think it's like you said, they're trying to think of their child's best interests, but they're caught up in the competition mindset.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's take this to some stereotypes here. And in some ways, I hate to do that, but in other ways, they're stereotypes because everybody gets it.
Right.
Okay. So let's pick on single moms first. Some single moms try to punish their ex by not letting them see the kids. What's this type of behavior doing to the kids?
Right. So there are studies that show that if the children have both parents in their lives, they grow up to be happier, healthier, more successful. Mm-hmm. But what happens is the single mom is thinking, I'm the mom. I know what's best. Mm-hmm. I've been raising our child all these years. You know, what makes you think you can come in and take over that part of it? Mm-hmm. But there's also fear in there, right? Is mm-hmm. what if he's better than I am? What if my child likes him better? I've devoted all this time to my child, and what if my child likes the other parent better?
Yeah, but that's how the parents see it, right? That's how that single mom sees it. What's right. going on for the kids when they aren't allowed to see their dad?
Right. How sad for them. They've come from this house where, yes, there was tension, but they were seeing both parents every day.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're not able to see another parent and likely hearing things like, well, your dad doesn't want to see you, or your dad doesn't have time for you, or you know, I'm just trying to protect you from things that your dad might do.
Mm.
How it's sad. It's just sad for these children.
It's horrifying. I mean, just hearing you say those words, my heart sunk.
Right. And unfortunately, too many kids hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, is there a difference? I mean, you know, I'm very fortunate, you know, to be 50 years old and have both my parents still around. Mm-hmm. Right. And my heart sunk when I heard that. How does it affect someone who's very young? You know, if you got a toddler, do they hear it differently than maybe, you know, a 7-year-old or a teenager?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, they do. You know, the younger the child is, the more they soak in what their parents are saying.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're only hearing one side of the story, it's that's where the parental alienation syndrome comes in.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm familiar with parental alienation, but I'm not sure everyone else who may be listening to our conversation does. Would you please define what parental alienation is for us?
Absolutely. So parental alienation is one parent working to take the children away from their other parent, to alienate that other parent. And it's mm-hmm. done through words like we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Your dad doesn't love you. Your dad doesn't have time for you. Your dad is bad for you. Mm-hmm. It's done by limiting the time that they spend together. There's a number of different ways.
Right. And I've actually heard it described as brainwashing.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
When you are not giving your child the chance to develop their own relationship with their other parent,
mm-hmm.
then it can easily become a parental alienation.
Yeah. And I don't think that really matters if, well, how old they are, you know?
Right.
I've talked to parents who have adult children who have been alienated as adults.
I agree with you. I think it's easier to develop those feelings in the younger children,
mm-hmm.
but it is, like you said, it's brainwashing, and you can do that at any age.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay. We've kind of picked on single moms here a little bit much. how about picking on single dads for a second? Go back to the stereotypes here. You know, and again, stereotype. I'm not saying that all single moms do this or all single dads do this, but the stereotype is that single dads will withhold child support or at least really complain about it because they don't want their ex spending their money. What's this doing to their kids?
Right. Well, I don't think that children should be involved in anything child support related at all. Mm-hmm. And I actually think that the laws are so old and antiquated and do need an overhaul. But outside of that, both parents are financially responsible for raising children. Now, if that means that one of them is paying child support in order to help raise that child, and the other one is, you know, maybe taking the child in on more of a full-time placement basis, mm-hmm. both parents are absolutely responsible for financially caring for them. Now, I have seen adult children of divorce who said, my childhood was affected because my dad didn't pay child support. My mom wasn't able to afford the best clothes or even new clothes mm-hmm. or all the great school supplies or things like extracurricular activities. So I can see how the children would be affected, but obviously they should not be a part of any of the discussions that right. come with child support.
Right. Okay. So, you know, these stereotypes are pretty obvious examples of how a divorce war is waged.
Right.
And I know that you spend day in, day out, you know, helping parents transition from the war zone into having a healthier co-parenting relationship. So I'm wondering, can you give us an example of another less obvious tactic that's meant to hurt the ex, but really winds up hurting the kids more?
Communication is one of them. When you have a parent, and in the book we call them the avoider, somebody who won't talk to you. You call, they won't pick up the phone. You text, they won't respond. You email or use a communication device like our Family Wizard or Co-Parently, and they mm-hmm. just refuse to. What happens is, ultimately, these parents need to talk to each other. Maybe there's an event at school. There is clothing has to be exchanged or an extracurricular activity. The parent that isn't talking is going to use the children as a communication device.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, can you ask your mom if I can have an extra weekend? Or, hey, can you tell dad that you need to bring these shoes home because we need them for church? Yeah. And these children then literally feel like the rope in a giant game of tug of war.
Mm. Yeah, you know, what goes through my mind is mom on one side, dad on the other, just yanking back and forth, and the poor child being rope-like, you know, and just limp in between, not having any real gumption to do anything because they love them both and they don't want to hurt either one.
Right. That's exactly it. The child loves both parents. And they're just trying to keep the peace. And that's what ends up happening is their childhood then becomes about keeping the peace between the parents mm-hmm. instead of a childhood.
Yeah. You know, I read something, probably 2 or 3 years ago of a little girl who was interviewed. Her parents had divorced and she was posed the question, something along the lines of, you know, what kind of an animal best describes you? And her response was a chameleon.
Huh.
And, you know, she, of course, they asked her, why a chameleon? It's because she can be whoever she needs to be to keep her mom and dad happy.
Wow. That's profound.
Yeah. Yeah. It really brought back to focus for me that kids aren't stupid.
No.
They have an agenda. Their agenda, honestly, at home, I think is peace and love.
Right.
You know, they want to be happy.
Right.
You know, I don't know any babies, you know, that walk around, you know, being miserable. You know, they're always ready to light up. They may have things going on where they have to cry and fuss to get things said, but, you know, I think that they really do want to be happy.
Yes, they absolutely do. And think about their lives too. Prior to a divorce, there's tension and fighting and mm-hmm. arguing all the time.
Yeah.
And after a divorce, these kids are just looking forward to peace.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
you know, and then there's the other side, the parents who have never fought in front of their kids. And all of a sudden, they're getting divorced.
I still argue these kids feel the tension, mm-hmm. even if they're great about taking the arguments elsewhere.
Yeah.
unless they're able to completely mask their emotions, and I'm not sure that that's the case.
Yeah.
Their kids are noticing something is up.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more, because that's how kids get along in the world, right? Before they have language, they're paying a whole lot of attention to what's going on around them. You know, is mommy happy? Is mommy sad?
Right.
And, you know, I've worked with people before who have very small children who are so attuned to their parent that if their parent is not happy, they're doing everything they can think of to make their parent happy.
Absolutely. And we talk about that in the book too, just as you can look at your child and know if they're getting sick, if they're angry or frustrated. Mm-hmm. Your child is looking at you and knowing the same thing.
Yeah. 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 Now, let me change tactics just a little bit here, or tacks, I guess I should say, not tactics. So I'm not going to talk differently. No accents or anything. but I try to figure out, you know, what's really at the root of the constant wars that go on for some families.
Right.
And I think a lot of the lashing out that happens is based on leftover pain from the divorce, mm-hmm. and a natural desire to defend themselves.
Right.
What do you think of that idea?
I absolutely agree. And I think it can be summed up in one word as fear.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I'm afraid that I will never get over these feelings. I am afraid that my child will suffer. I'm afraid for a million different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I'm going to guess that it's not always the kids that they're afraid for most first, and it's not always themselves that they're afraid for most first. Do you have any kind of idea as to where the biggest fears are typically for people? Is it about themselves or their kids, or where?
Well, I think it's the change mm-hmm. aspect. Even though the divorce was probably the right solution, what happens after that? You know, you have this plan for your life, you get married, you have kids, you retire, you know, have your husband next to you or your wife next to you. And now that's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it completely overhauls their life. And a lot of times you're left with this, what do I do next feeling?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and I think that something that goes along with that, you know, incredible fear, which, you know, really makes people feel the need to defend themselves in any way possible, you know, which could be avoidance, right? Which could be lashing out, is that they lose all their power of choice and clear thinking. So they become victims.
There's this great, do you want to become a victim or a victor question? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And again, it's not a competition, but as a victim, you're constantly in defense mode and you're still in that competition mindset. Mm-hmm. But as a victor, you are confident in your parenting skills. You become confident as a person and in your love for your child and their love for you. And that love is independent of that between your child and their other parent. You know, and once you gain that,
mm-hmm.
then you're able to sort of move forward and the fear starts to go away a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that fear and the victimhood versus being the victor expands way out even beyond just the co-parenting sphere.
Absolutely.
Right. I think that it actually goes to their entire lives. I hear people talk about, well, you know, they can be a victim because they got divorced, just in general, right? Because now all of a sudden their ex is going to get half of everything.
Right.
They're going to have to move, you know?
Right.
They're going to have to find a job if they've been a stay-at-home parent, you know? All this stuff that their ex is making them do because of the divorce.
Right.
Right? And how miserable an existence is that?
Yes. As long as your mindset is, my ex is making me, my ex did this, my ex did that, you have taken the power out of your life and put it in your ex's hands.
Yeah, and if you divorced him, you sure as hell don't want them to have that power.
Exactly. I mean,
when you're really faced with that question anyway.
Right.
So what's the best way to get people to really understand that the stupid war that they continue to have with their ex is really crippling their children and themselves?
I really do feel like, in my experience and working in the classes and with these clients, once you sit down and you just pose that question, listen, imagine your life when your child is 18 and they aren't tied to a placement schedule anymore. When you aren't as tied as co-parents because you're not raising your child on a daily basis, what does it look like? You look back. Are you going to see arguments and fighting and constant battles, or are you going to see give and take?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are, it's a sobering thought for them because they don't want to be looking back saying all it was arguments over our children.
Yeah.
And that means that they're going to have to step up and they're going to be the positive influence. And that's what the book is all about, is one of these parents is stepping up and saying, I'm not doing this anymore. I am not going to be in a constant battle with you, and are taking the right steps.
Well, and that's what I think is so important, because a lot of people believe that you have to both agree to call a truce.
Not at all.
Yeah. One person can make a huge difference. It may not be fast.
Right.
Right? But they can totally change. And I know that, you know, if your spouse is expecting you to do X and you do A instead, something completely unrelated, they're going to have to pause for a second, aren't they, before they
can
respond.
Absolutely. And it's true, right? Nobody knows you better than your ex, and nobody knows better how to push your buttons than your ex.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this all comes down to. If you're no longer allowing them to push your buttons, and instead of responding with arguments or defending yourself or even withdrawing, you respond and ignore that, and then move forward with some of these communication tips and some of these negotiation tactics that are in there, holy cow, there's no way they'll be able to ignore that.
Well, let me ask you this. What is the number one communication tactic that you think everybody should have, regardless of whether or not they're dealing with a divorce war? Just the most basic one.
I really believe it's listening, and not listening to reply, but listen to hear.
Mm-hmm. Explain to me what you mean by that difference there.
So as we're talking and you're asking questions, you know, obviously I want to respond to you in that your listeners will get an idea of who I'm like and what I'm like, but mm-hmm. I also want to hear your questions. What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
And in any conversation we have, the person that you're talking to is trying to convey a message. And if all you're doing is listening to respond instead of hearing their message, you're missing part of the conversation. And it happens all the time in co-parenting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, it happens all the time between the co-parents and between the parents and the kids.
Yes. Oh, divorced or not, parents and children, it's really hard. The kids are speaking a different language than the parents.
And we don't just mean slang.
Right. Not at all. Not at all. But, you know, our kids are using ways to tell us that they need love or support that aren't using the words, I need your love and support.
Yeah. And it may not even be words, you know, to go back to your point earlier, it could just be a look on their face.
Absolutely.
You know, their posture.
Right.
You know, it could be the way that they're, you know, kicking their foot.
Right.
You know, whatever it is that your kids do.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, I've recently read, well, obviously I read a lot, but, you know, another book that talks about relationships in general called Wired for Love.
Yes.
And he has a wonderful theory about, you know, communication, about some people being waves, which is, you know, they come and attack and then they disappear and then they come and attack and then they disappear. An attack could be, you know, a positive attack or a negative attack, but it's just kind of like, you know, all over you. And then there are people, you know, that tend to be islands that want to be separate or avoidant, you know, just kind of leave me alone. This is too much activity for me. And I kind of hear that language going on in, you know, what you're saying as well with respect to how parents with their communication, you know, trying to co-parent can, you know, be all over each other with all kinds of different ways of communicating and just needing to have a break from it and not communicating. How do you break down those kinds of habits of communication?
It's a good question. You know, you're going to have two different communication styles, and those styles, like you said, may change over time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a matter, I think, of respecting your other parent's communication style.
Mm.
And that takes a lot in a co-parenting situation.
Yeah, especially if they've already declared war on each other, to actually now use that R word, respect.
Right. There's this great quote that I use in every class. It is, you don't have to feel respectful to act respectful.
Mm.
You could be just eaten alive on the inside, but if you're not willing to step up and say, listen, you only want to communicate through email, but I don't think that's appropriate. I'm willing to respect your choice on that, but would like to revisit this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's unfair.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, using the R word, you know, which is probably like pulling teeth.
Yes.
You know, to get people to say, okay, I can respect my ex, even though they make me crazy, you know, but I really loved how you said, you know, behaving in a respectful way is completely different than actually feeling the emotion.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think, you know, correct me here if I'm wrong, but my thoughts are that by acting in the respectful way, that it helps to calm things down, not only in the co-parenting relationship, but with the kids too.
Yes. Your kids are watching how you are treating their other parent and just generally how you're handling conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And your children learn more from what you do than what you say.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that interesting that they're so observant in every other way? You know, it's what you do, how you sit, you know, all the nonverbals.
Yes.
You know, whether or not you get out of bed in the morning, you know, whether you shower that day.
Right.
You know, all the stuff that can so easily be put to the sidelines when you're dealing with the grief of a divorce. And yet you still need to be a parent.
Yes. Yes.
I'm sure it's incredibly confusing.
It is. And, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing for our children to see us, you know, be in our pajamas for an entire day just because we don't feel like getting dressed. I don't think that's bad for them to see.
Yeah.
What I do think is bad is then when that happens for a week straight or 10 days straight, mm-hmm. then it's time to pull in some reinforcement.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing that I think is most important, is that so many times when people go through divorce, they feel completely alone.
Yes.
Like there's nobody who gets it. Sure, so-and-so has been divorced, but look at them, you know, or so-and-so has been divorced and they can't seem to understand what I'm telling them, you know?
Yep.
And it's so isolating. How does someone know when it's really time to reach out in some way and say, I need some help?
You know, I'm an advocate for having a support system
mm-hmm.
all the time in any situation. But in divorce, if you can say, listen, guys, we're getting a divorce. You're my support system. If you start to notice that I'm not taking phone calls, I'm not getting dressed, I'm missing work, or any signs that would worry you, tell them ahead of time to mm-hmm. jump in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good advice. That's really good advice, Karen. So, oh my gosh. You know what? We've already been talking for like 30 minutes.
We could talk all day on this.
No, without an issue. Oh my gosh. Well, shoot, I have to start wrapping it up for us, girl.
Okay.
Everyone, you know, I have been talking with the fabulous Karen Becker, author of How to Co-Parent When Your Ex Won't. You can find out more about Karen and her work by visiting www.karenbeckerlifecoach.com. And Karen has a really great surprise for you if you happen to visit her site before June 30th, 2015. I know you want to visit it because I do. So, in summary, you know, I guess the message here is that it's really incredibly easy to get caught up in a divorce war and forget that the only casualties of this kind of war are your kids. So to help end the battles and put your focus back on your kids, you just might want to work with a co-parenting expert like Karen.